Oh, I love it. Please, how much is that Picasso in the window?
Picasso Femme d'Alger, selling it here at Christie's, $160 million. Brett, it's yours. So.
That's it? Christie's unloaded Picasso's Woman of Algiers for a paltry $179 million, when you add in the sales tax and fees. A priceless painting nabbed for the cost of a dime a dozen Boeing 767. It's a disgrace. And then 30 minutes later, Alberto Giacometti's sculpture Pointing Man went out the door for $141.3 million, including fees. These are not basement sale times in the art world. Christie's, in fact, has just seen the art world's first billion-dollar week. Prices and demand for investment safe havens has created a bubble not seen since before the 2008 crash, which means that it's likely that big urban museums bidding for the public are basically out of the running. Joining me now is Carl Swanson, editor-at-large for New York Magazine. Carl, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
What do you think is going on in the market right now? Is it a bubble? Is it parking of money looking for something safe, or is it an appreciation of art that's crowding out the museums?
I mean, there are a couple of answers here. I mean, yeah. One is, you know, whether or not it's a bubble, I don't think we'll know for a little bit of while. I mean, in some ways, it's reflecting sort of larger trends in sort of capital accumulation globally. I mean, when you think about something like paying that amount of money for a beautiful Picasso, you're not buying it necessarily for its sort of intrinsic value. What you're buying it for is because you have that much money.
Right.
And the fact is, there are people who have that much money. And one of the things that was interesting about that sale was that, you know, Christie said that how many of the people who were buying as they said, at the very top of that market, meaning the people who were paying a lot of money, people that you know, caused that to be an $8 million a minute sale. Most of those people, or I think he said all those people, have been in the market for less than 5 years. And that shows you something about, you know, these people are not sort of long-term collectors who sort of have like a big history in terms of like the value of things, in terms of connoisseurship, in terms of, you know, this object is something that will appreciate in value that maybe that can become a part of some sort of conventional, or as we know it, sort of cultural patrimony. It's something else. I mean, it's something else that's probably more akin to that $100 million penthouse or the several hundred million dollar penthouses that we're always reading about in, up on 57th Street.
And this is the kind of thing that happens in the art market periodically. I mean, the Japanese money came into the market in the
Absolutely.
80s and changed things. I mean, there will soon be a time when you have to
go to Abu
Dhabi. Let's
think about the 1880s also. I mean, you know, I mean, a lot of what we think about as being, you know, this sort of august traditional like the Met and things like that. I mean, those museums, I mean, you know, Gertrude Vanderbilt Whitney, you know, in her way, you know, was starting a private museum when she started the Whitney Museum.
Right.
I mean, this is a long history. I mean, when, you know, these are always sort of cultural trophies. What's unusual now and what's sort of what causes us to talk about it is the sheer amount of money, the sheer surprising amount of money. This is one of the things they spend money on. It's a way for them to sort of transfer wealth around the world. And it's a way for like someone who maybe is an emerging market, as they keep saying, you know, it's a way for them to sort of claim also because they have this money, you know, it's a way for them to claim this prestige. Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
The Russians wanted to be players, so they collected the paintings that went in the Hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
And then
absolutely.
The Mellons actually bought those paintings when the Bolsheviks
completely
crashed.
No, absolutely.
And now we're looking at a real transformation in the art world. If you add the movements to the Gulf, you know, where the Guggenheim's going to have an annex in the Gulf. I mean, what's going to—
Some things that are happening in Doha. I mean, you know, the Sheikah of Qatar, you know, she was the one that spent $300 million not so long on something. For her, that's just money. I mean, her, you know, she wants to buy the best thing. She can buy that. And that is something, you know—
That we can't do.
No, I mean, if you think about, you know, I was talking to someone I know who works at a major museum the other day about this, and they were talking about how, you know, if you think about, like, you know, under the people that have given, you know, money— you know, recently to museums, you know, you think about sort of like the Lauders who gave all this money, for example, to the new
right,
Whitney.
Right.
You know, they gave, you know, $130 million or something to build the new Whitney. That wouldn't even pay for one of these paintings. They wouldn't ask them to buy one of these paintings. It wouldn't make sense.
That's wild. I mean, what's the future of, I mean, say, for instance, you can go on to 70th and Fifth Avenue and see the Frick, which was an old residence that's now in the state of maybe becoming a bigger museum. Is this the natural occurrence of things where these private collections that actually live in some human space gradually move into an inhuman sort of museum space and then eventually, you know, become these trophies that maybe end up in, under lock and key?
It doesn't happen in that order usually. I mean, in some ways, like the first two parts of that is actually the best case scenario, which is that like, you know, you have this very wealthy person who accumulates all this and they want the sort of social prestige, maybe sort of the aesthetic transformation, the mystical aesthetic transformation of owning these objects. And then historically what's happened is that then they would give these objects to museums, either for estate planning purposes, far exceeding any estate planning purposes that you and I will ever have.
Right.
Or there's some other sort of tax advantage. One of the things that's interesting right now is the rise of, and this has something, as I understand it, to do with the tax code, the rise of the private museum. So you basically get to have all the tax advantages of owning this art and sort of like allowing, you know, it to ostensibly sort of be in the public domain without actually having to give it to, and this stresses out the museums because it means that they can't be players, especially in contemporary art anymore. And these are also the
people tax-advantaged churches of individual wealth.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's like Scientology. it is kind of fascinating.
What about in the art world itself? These people are in the art collecting business for just a few years. I'm wondering if they're going for the top-end things, if that depresses the prices for mid-level things, for de Koonings, or hurts emerging artists because the money is really looking for a safe bet.
Well, that doesn't seem to be the case because there's a lot of, you know, I guess the word that was used is froth in, you know, all the way across the entire market. There was some fear, I think, on the part of, I don't know if fear is the right word, but there was some commentary that maybe by inventing this new category of contemporary as well as more historic things that Christie's did, you know, by including a Monet in there as well, that somehow they would sort of kind of shoot their wad with that. You know, there was some there's some commentary that has happened, that would happen. And definitely their second sale was not quite as urgent as that one. But it's all relative. I mean, they did very well.
So if you own a Jeff Koons dog, you don't need to worry.
I don't think so, no.
Just where to put it.
It's true. I mean, it's there's always somebody out there.
There's always somebody out there, exactly. Carl Swanson, editor-at-large for New York Magazine. Thanks so much.
Thank you.